Welcome back. We're talking about how to cultivate a great attitude. And here's a truth that cannot be denied, that victim thinking douses a great attitude. It's true. Blaming and striving against God. Romans 9, verse 19 and 20, but one of you will say to me, then why does God still blame us? For who resists his will? But who are you, O man, to talk back to God? Shall what is formed say to him who formed it, why did you make me like this? This is a spiritual form of victim thinking. I mean, we see that in Job, where Job's friends are trying to get Job to curse God and die because great calamity has come upon Job and his family. At some point, God the Creator made our situation. And to accept that and to not strive against this and say, I will take whatever situation I am given and I will glorify God through my life in this situation. Victim thinking, and what I want to talk about victim thinking is, and again, a sensitive, very politically incorrect thing to talk about, because many will say, you know, it's the plight of the victim, and that we have to concern ourselves with the victim and then get a worldview around categories of people that have been victimized by, you know, the supremacy of some group, or whether it's capitalists, or whether it's this controlling power, you know, the supremacy of one particular party, the supremacy of a worldview out of universities, the supremacy. You can start talking about, where do you talk about this supremacy and those who are victimized by it? The supremacy of a white man, the supremacy of feminism, the supremacy of a racial perspective. And all of these are world constructs. Those are the constructs that take away from the glory of God, as he has made man and woman in his image, and he has created this world for us to be stewards in the world. That's the biblical worldview. So what happens is there is a like a Marxist philosophy that tries to get everyone to believe that somehow they're persecuted, they're the victims, and then out of that victim you rise up in conflict. That's called the conflict theory. And those who are victimized take down the victimizers. Again, that's a narrative out there right now. So, but in a very practical way, if you adhere to victim thinking, it's very hard to get a positive, great attitude. You know, victim thinking started way back in the Garden of Eden. Now the serpent was more crafty than any of the wild animals the Lord God had made. And he says to the woman, did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden? Oh, there is a conflict theorist, Satan himself, in the form of a serpent. Did God really say, oh, Eve, you and Adam are such victims, by God overbearing that you can't eat any of the fruit of any of the trees in the garden? God only said, do not eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, eat of the tree of life. But there's that victim thinking that comes. So it seems a little counterintuitive to think that to not do the woe is me will actually bring you happiness. And that's true. There's a counterintuitive take responsibility approach, that when you take responsibility and don't compare yourself to anybody else, that you find a better attitude. So let's talk about the counterintuitive take responsibility approach. Now, first of all, know that You will sin and fail, and you need to give yourself grace to admit this. 1 John 2 verse 1, my dear children, I write you this so you will not sin. But if anyone does sin, we have one who speaks to the Father in our defense, Jesus Christ, the righteous one. So in taking a take responsibility approach to a great attitude, know that it's impossible to be perfect in this. This is an attitude of life. That essentially, you admit when you're wrong, you forgive, you if something needs to change, you take responsibility to bring changes. This general attitude brings a lot of confidence and credibility and an attitude of gratitude. So, number two, the counterintuitive approach of taking responsibility. Know that that others will fail you, and it is easy to allow their failures to be your excuse to blame instead of thrive. Genesis 5 verse 20. I love how Joseph says this. You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is being done, the saving of many lives. So the story of Joseph is fascinating. He's sold into slavery to captives in Egypt. He goes through a whole story. You can read about that in the latter part of the book of Genesis. And at every point, he's confronted with places where he could become the victim. He's tempted by Potiphar's wife. And, you know, he basically could say, I deserve this. I deserve to have sexual relations with this woman. I'm put in charge now, and I've been vindicated after being unfairly sold into slavery. But instead, he says, no, this is not right. He does not do it. But he does not become a victim about it. Even after he's thrown into prison, he's got a positive attitude in prison. And it's so positive that eventually he's remembered and as the teller of dreams. So he tells Pharaoh his dream. And then as time goes on, he saves even his family from famine. And then that passage, and I'll go back to it again, because the brothers are worried about being persecuted by him. And then he says, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is being done, the saving of many lives. Wow. There is a not victim thinker. And it's amazing. It's counterintuitive. Here's number three. Know that you need to stay away from leader comparisons. Now here's some interesting passages. In the early church, there was a sort of like, there's that person, there's this person, and they're not taking responsibility for their own walk for God. They're saying, I follow this person, I follow that person. 1 Corinthians 1 verse 12. What I mean to say is this, one of you says, I follow Paul, another I follow Apollos, another I follow Cephas, still another I follow Christ. Or 1 Corinthians 3 verse 4. For one, when one says, I follow Paul, and another I follow Apollos, are you not mere men? There is something eroding to responsibility when essentially you do something merely based upon following someone else. Now, when I follow someone else, I own that peace that they share as a gift of God. But I do not blame them if it works or doesn't work. So many people I've noticed over the years, well, they'll try something, and instead of like engaging in what it is and learning from it in your situation, they will say, here's this book, I'm copying the book as it is. Now, I am not against listening really intensely to what others have to say. But then when it doesn't work, I find that they'll even then ditch the book, and they will diss it, and they'll say, that person, and that was happening in the early church. You know, people will come forward, and then something didn't quite go right, and then There would be the, well, Paul said this, Apollos said that, and it would create an environment where instead of owning their own direction, instead they were blaming others as an excuse. The counterintuitive approach of responsibility. Number four, know that you will do better taking responsibility for your thoughts, actions, and behavior. 1 Peter 2, verse 12, live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. So, taking responsibility then means is that when you live your life as an image bearer of God, blaming no one. You know, what is taking responsibility of the essence? Does it have anything to do with blame? Well, in some ways it does. It does this. I will first blame myself. That seems a little bit strange. Well, because if I blame myself, I know that I see the truth, that I am a fallen person, that I need grace. And where do people who need grace go? They go to Jesus Christ. If anyone sins, go to him. I also know that I am a servant. I am not the know-it-all. I don't have all the answers. So I can live in the freedom of knowing that, look, we are all on this earth together. We all need the same Savior, Jesus Christ. I can look at somebody else and see the thousand ways that they've done something wrong. Or I can sort of point to myself. See, because I want to be careful with that word blame, but you get what my point is. Is I can point to myself and I can say, you know what, as far as I'm concerned, may I glorify God fully in my life. You know, a lot of people, they live their lives never really looking at themselves with sober judgment. That is what I'm saying. The Apostle Paul says, look at yourself with sober judgment. That's taking responsibility. One more thing. Keep people away from blaming if possible. Okay, see, in other words, stay with people, but keep people away from blaming if possible. 1 Timothy 5, verse 7 says, give people these instructions too, so no one may be open to blame. So, what is the Apostle Paul saying here? That no one will be open to blame. I believe good leadership is creating a place where people do well. Good management is creating places where people do well with the gifts God has given them. A leader is not about being on the throne. A leader is about lifting others up to places that they do well. And when that starts happening, a culture of a take your responsibility for who you are, a excitement about doing what you're called to do comes over the entire culture and over you. You believe that you are a servant of God, called to just discharge your duties, and you do it in order to lift up others. You know what that does? That creates a great attitude inside yourself, and it takes the pressure off. I know we will never get away from blaming and complaining because that's so in our sinful nature. But if in the new life of Jesus Christ, that blaming and complaining is crippled, and we more and more take responsibility. You know, I'm going to end with a little story from my brother. So my brother tells a story where he was a young leader and he worked for a Japanese company, and something went wrong, and he didn't think it was his fault, and he didn't think any part of it was his fault. So the owners of the company called him into the office and said to my brother Rich, he said, "Well, Rich, we have good news for you." And my brother thought, "Oh, great. We are not going to fire you for what happened." And my brother was like, "Hey, I had nothing to do with this." And then they went on to say, they used the word severe. We first must be severe on ourselves and ask ourselves, what did we do that in our policies, in our leadership, that allowed someone else to fail so much? So you're the leader. That person failed under you. What can you learn to not let that happen again? In other words, they were saying to not allow someone else to be open to blame or blaming others. And I always thought that was an interesting way to think of it, severe. So when something goes wrong, I like to first ask myself, you know, severe, sort of blame myself, sort of, what did I do wrong? Or what do I need to change? Not in a way that I self-loathe and all these other things like that, but what can I improve? How can my ego not get in the way? How can I see what God has in store because of this situation? So in being a person who cultivates a great attitude, it is about not being a blamer or a complainer or a victim thinking that then permeates my existence so I can't function any longer. Instead, by the grace of God, seeing things the way they are so I might grow up in Him who is my head, and I might bless others.